Chapter 14. The entire bridge shook as the dinosaur gripped the train with its teeth. Becca screamed as she grabbed me away from the door, and then she thrust her rifle at me.
"Here,"
she said.
"It's all yours.
Let's get to the front of the train. See if Haywan can speed this up." We ran through the next carriage as the train shook again. The wheels barely scraped along the rails as the dino pulled on the last carriage, and the engine started to squeal as Haywan tried to keep the train moving forward.
"Jason!"
Haywan shouted as we reached the driver's carriage.
"What's going on? The screen to let me see behind is broken."
"T-Rex," I replied. "It's munching on the back of the train. Can this thing go any faster?"
"Not really,"
Haywan said.
"I managed to get it moving, but some of the controls aren't working. I can't seem to change the speed." "What do we do?"
Becca asked, as we peered out to see the far side of the bridge slowly edge closer. "Can we break the carriages apart?" I asked. Maybe the T-Rex will be happy with the one it has and let the engine keep going." The train violently shook as the dino grabbed another mouthful of carriage, and we stumbled as it tipped dangerously to the left before it fell back onto the tracks.
"We can't do that from inside,"
Haywan said.
"We would need to be between the carriages, and I don't think you can do it by hand. I think it needs a machine." "Fuck!"
Becca said as we desperately looked around the control room for inspiration. "We're almost at the other side," I said, as I glanced out of the front window. "If we can just stay on until then, we can make a run for it." The train chugged along, despite the T-Rex's attempt to stop it, and we neared the end of the bridge. The view was much the same on this side of the track, with a mixture of some dense green trees and a main road that crossed the train tracks. "That road would lead us right to the highway," I said. "According to the GPS, we just need to get a little further on, and we'll be on our way." The train shook again, as the front of the vehicle almost reached the end of the bridge. The dino roared, and we grabbed onto whatever we could to steady ourselves.
"It's going to tip us into the water. We should get out and run."
"Not yet. Wait until we've reached the other side. Then we can take cover among those trees."
"Shouldn't we stay on the train? It's not much, but it's a layer of metal it will have to get through before it can reach us. That's more protection than just being out in the open."
"It knows we're in here. If we can escape without it seeing us, it might just follow the train until it realizes there's nothing inside."
"What about the motorbikes?"
"Let's do this one step at a time," I said. "We get off the train and hide first. We can think about going back for the motorbikes afterwards, okay?" The girls nodded as the train rattled again, but we finally started to pull onto the other side of the wide river. As the driver's carriage made it onto solid ground, the train screeched to a halt. Then the T-Rex rammed the last carriage from the tracks. "We need to move now," I said, as I carefully stuck my head out to see the dino charge again. "You see that clump of trees? Head for there first. Then we can find somewhere further back." The girls nodded, and we swung open the small door with the broken window which led out onto the train tracks. "Now," I whispered, "go!" Haywan jumped down from the train first. She landed safely on the ground and raced over to the cover of the trees. Becca followed her and nervously glanced at the T-Rex as she ran. I took one final look at the beast, which was busy trying to knock the train onto its side like a pissed-off toddler, and I jumped just as the dino headbutted the back of the vehicle again. The train moaned and wobbled for a moment, and then it toppled to the side of the tracks. The T-Rex roared in triumph as I raced after the girls, and I didn't look back until I dove behind a large tree trunk. "Are you both okay?" I asked breathlessly, as the T-Rex began to pull the train apart.
"I think so,"
Haywan nodded.
"Just about,"
Becca agreed. We watched from our hiding spot as the enormous dino stepped on the train like a pro wrestler, and the back carriage crumpled like paper under the huge feet.
"Good thing we left the train,"
Haywan said.
"You were right, Jason. It didn't see us."
"We should try and get further back," I said as I glanced behind us. "We still don't know how good their other senses are."
"There isn't anywhere else to go,"
Becca said.
"I saw this side of the river as we crossed, and if we leave this wooded bit, we're basically in the open." "It might just leave,"
Haywan said.
"It wanted to catch the train, and it did, so it might forget there was anything on it."
We watched as the dino nudged the train and climbed off the bridge. It roared and stomped down on the front carriage with an ear-shattering crash. Then the T-Rex lowered its head, as if it was trying to look inside the small windows in search of the runaway food. After a moment, the dinosaur seemed to realize there wasn't a snack inside the train, and it lifted its head to the air and cried out. I hoped with every inch of my being that it would angrily stomp back over the bridge, but the dino didn't seem to take its defeat very well, and it slowly started to walk to the clump of trees opposite us and peer into the woodland.
Shit, I whispered. It's looking for us.
The T-Rex stepped deeper into the clump of trees and roared as it knocked branches aside in its search.
I need the grenade launcher. And the ammo bag.
The ammo bag is on my motorbike,
Heiwan said.
Okay, so I just have to get to the motorbikes, I muttered.
I peered out and tried to judge how easily I could get to the motorbikes without the T-Rex spotting me. Its back was turned to us, and there might not be another chance to do what I had in mind.
I'm gonna get it, I said.
But Heiwan grabbed my wrist.
You can't,
the Korean hissed.
It's too dangerous. It'll spot you if it turns around.
That's why I have to go now, I said. Both of you get as far back as you can and stay hidden. We don't really have anywhere to hide, and if it keeps looking through the trees, it's going to find us eventually. I'll be careful.
With a quick, reassuring smile at the girls, I sprinted out from behind the tree and made my way toward the bridge. The head and massive jaws were still lost among the trees, but its tail swung from side to side along the track. I just prayed it would stay that way just a bit longer. I reached the fallen train just as the dino reared its head out of the trees and froze as if it was listening for something. My heart leapt into my throat as I dove to the ground behind the crushed train and laid as still as possible while the T-Rex sniffed the air. The dino paused mid-sniff, and I held my breath as sweat fell down my forehead and neck. I knew even the tiniest movement could draw the massive creature's attention, so I pressed my hand over my mouth as I felt the need to gasp for air. Then I heard the creature grunt, and the hairs on my arm stood on end. Fuck. I looked over at the motorbikes halfway down the bridge and tried to weigh up my options realistically. It was unlikely that I would get the whole way across without being noticed, but if I could get to the grenade launcher in time, that would be all I needed. I swallowed the nausea that had crept up my throat and closed my eyes for a second before I made my move. I didn't hear anything more from the dino, so I finally peeked around the ruined metal edge of the train and saw that the T-Rex had its head back inside the woodland. I figured this meant the big, hungry dino had decided to ignore me, so I stood up slowly, took a moment to make sure it still hadn't heard me, and then raced off down the bridge. I tried to land on the spots between the raised metal of the tracks to make my sprint as quiet as I could, but it still sounded impossibly loud to me. I risked a glance over my shoulder as I neared the motorbikes, and to my horror, I saw the T-Rex pull its head from the trees and turn to where the girls were hidden.
Shit!
I muttered as I hurled myself over the last few feet of track. I skidded to a halt by the motorbikes and did a quick check for damage. There were a few scratches and a large dent on Becca's, but otherwise they looked okay. I said a quick prayer of thanks and then grabbed the SA-80 with the grenade launcher from my motorbike and the ammo bag from Heiwan's motorbike. I opened the ammo bag, found a grenade, and loaded the launcher as quickly as I could with my shaking hands. A quick glance to the other end of the bridge revealed that the dinosaur still hadn't noticed me. It was still focused on the trees where Becca and Heiwan were hidden. I needed to draw that T-Rex away from them, and for a moment, I considered riding right up to the thing and taking my shot. But I'd seen how fast these things were, so I needed something a little less gung-ho. I looked at the motorbikes again, and then I smiled. As the T-Rex started to move out of the trees, I switched on the lights and sirens on the police motorbikes and then moved back a few feet. The T-Rex lifted its head, looked toward the noise, and then roared as it started to run. With my heart pounding at a million miles an hour, I swung the grenade launcher around and aimed it at the dino's head. As the creature's enormous feet shook the ground, it opened its mouth to show rows of razor-sharp, blood-stained teeth. The T-Rex swung one more foot down as I took my shot, and the explosive flew at the beast's head as it opened its mouth wider. The grenade shot straight into the dino's open mouth and exploded with a loud roar of its own. Dinosaur brains flew everywhere like a watermelon blown up with a stick of dynamite, and the enormous body wobbled violently before it fell over to the side with a thud that shook the earth. The bloody shower of T-Rex bits followed me as I ran toward the trees where I'd left my girls. I hadn't heard any screams, and I trusted my girls to know what to do, but I was still worried about them.
Becca! Heiwan!
We're here!
Heiwan called from behind me, and I spun around to see the girls come out from the other side of the crash train.
Oh, thank God,
I breathed. I felt lightheaded with relief as I dropped my weapons and watched the girls run toward me. Becca and Heiwan looked just as relieved as I felt, and when they reached me, they almost knocked me over with their embrace.
Oh, Jason! Oh, my God! That was terrifying! I felt my heart stop.
I thought I'd lost you two, I said, as I pulled them both close and burrowed into the mess of blonde and black hair.
Never,
Heiwan said firmly.
We ran over to the train as the T-Rex turned around. I think it heard us, but couldn't work out where we were. You blew up its head with a grenade. I really don't know if anything more badass has ever happened on Earth.
I laughed as I gripped my loves tightly and inhaled the scent of their hair. The familiar smell helped settle my nerves, and I could feel my breathing start to slow down. They were safe, and that was the most important thing in the world to me right then.
Jason,
Heiwan said,
I think you have dino brains on you.
Probably, I laughed as we pulled apart. I had to run through some of it to get to you. I looked down at myself and tried to brush off what I could, but a lot of the blood had already soaked into the fabric. The smell of the smoke mixed with the inside of the T-Rex skull could only be described as a nightmarish barbecue. There were patches of blood all over my clothes, and I shook my hair out to dislodge any unpleasantness. How come you two didn't get any goop on you? I asked, as I admired the girls' perfectly clean armor and clothing.
We jumped inside the carriage when we saw you with the rocket launcher. We knew it was about to get messy.
You got that right. I smiled as I looked over at the huge, headless corpse. I'll be honest, I always found English train rides kind of boring, but that one was pretty epic.
That's one word for it. Let's get our motorbikes before anything else decides to join us.
I think yours is a bit dented, I said to the blonde, but other than that, they seem okay.
Here,
Becca said, as she swung the salvaged package off and rummaged around inside.
I think we all earned a little chocolate.
The Brit tore part of the wrapper off the huge candy bar and broke off pieces for each of us.
Oh, I've forgotten how good this is,
I moaned as I ate my piece.
Well, after that show, we could probably give you more,
Becca replied.
You know, once we've settled in for the night.
I grinned, and after I retrieved my weapons, I followed the girls back to the motorbikes. The police siren sounded unbearably loud now that the T-Rex was dead, and we quickly switched them off. We did a quick check, but the motorbikes were good, and our packs were still secured. We reloaded the rifles and then drove across the now empty bridge. Once we were on the other side, we could see the highway just across a brown field, but I pulled out my phone to check the GPS just to be sure. Okay, it's time to go to Lincoln.
It feels like we spent forever at the Stinky Pete. Kind of feels weird to be back out on the road again. We've got a briefcase to deliver and a mum to get to.
I wonder what it's like to have no top-secret government tasks to perform, I mused. Can you believe there are people out there who are just hidden in secret basements and watching TV?
I watched a documentary about doomsday preppers. I thought they were crazy, but now I'm kind of wishing I had my own bunker.
Yeah, I bet they're laughing now, with their underground homes and years' worth of supplies of food.
How are your bunker-building skills? I could really do with a peaceful sleeping spot, as long as we're all in it together.
I'll get right on it, I grinned as we started to drive. Just as soon as we complete our mission. We tore past the fallen dinosaur, and I took one last look at the bloody debris that littered the ground. When we turned past the dense patch of trees and onto the road, we quickly saw a huge buildup of cars that blocked the way. Huh, I said as we slowed down. That was a short-lived trip. The cars were too neatly arranged to be the result of a massive pileup. There were two rows of vehicles, each spread across the road and joined together from tip to tail. Beside the road, there was a large field enclosed with a small wooden fence. There were a few dead cows strewn across the grass, but it would take us back onto the road if nothing came looking for the meat. I guess someone was trying to keep the dinos out, I sighed. Let's just drive through the field. I'm taking it as a good sign that there's nothing munching on those dead cows at the moment. We took off through the open gate of the field and made our way across the grassy enclosure. The smell of the rotten animal bodies wafted through the air, and I sped up until I reached the far end of the field. There was another gate that I kicked open, and we drove back out onto the road with no sign of whoever had made the barricade of cars. It wasn't long before we were on the wide highway again. The wind had picked up as we sped down the open road, and the smell of dead cows and dinos seemed to follow us. Thankfully, there were no more barricades, although there were plenty of abandoned cars. I was tempted to stop and search them for supplies, but I didn't want to hold up the day's journey anymore. The T-Rex had already taken up too much of the morning.
"There's supposed to be a great cathedral in Lincoln," I called over to the girls as we drove. "Maybe we should visit. Could be just as exciting as the castle."
"Screw that. I know you're a history lover, but I think we can maybe skip the historical attractions for a while. We're nearly there,"
Haywan said as we passed a sign for Lincoln.
"It will almost be time to hand over the briefcase."
"About time. Let's hope we don't have to spend too much time in old Lincolnshire."
As we drove, the fields around us started to dwindle, and the scenery became more suburban. A few little cottages with white speckled walls lined the road as we neared the city limits. We slowed down as the road became smaller and headed into the outskirts of the city. There was some gorgeous architecture around us as we neared the heart of the ancient city. We drove past a church that looked centuries old and a little house with its own tiny turret. There was even a row of pristine Tudor homes that had somehow remained undamaged. "Have you ever been here before?" I asked the girls.
"When I was little, we came a few times, but I don't remember it much. I've never been. It looks pretty, though. It's strange, all these places that I never thought I would travel to. Now I see them, but for all the wrong reasons."
"At least we get to travel," I grinned. "Now, the next question is, where will we find the Air Force base?"
"It will probably have signposts. If we get into the city center, there might be something to point us in the right direction."
I looked around at our surroundings, and it seemed like we were still a good distance away from the middle of Lincoln. Most of what we passed were semi-detached houses, and we even went by a few red phone booths.
"Seems like we're still in the suburbs. Keep your eyes out for anyone who might want the motorbikes. I bet suburban moms have gone full Mad Max."
I was only half-joking, since the houses all seemed quiet, but you could never tell who might be watching from a dark window. We had seen so many abandoned, burned-out cars that I knew our motorbikes were hot property.
"It's quiet,"
Haywan said, as we drove past a well-kept garden with a cheerful gnome.
"Too quiet. I've always wanted to say that."
"I guess it could be a good thing," I said. "Maybe the whole place is abandoned, so there's no reason for dinos to be around if there's no food for them."
"Oh, something ate everyone, and is still waiting here for the next travelers."
"Wow, when did my love become so morbid?"
I heard a crunch to my right, and I looked at the sidewalk, but there was nothing there.
"Did you hear something?"
Becca asked.
"I thought I heard a scuttling noise."
"Yeah," I said warily. "I don't see anything, but I heard it too. Maybe we should get off the main road."
"This is the fastest way to the city center,"
Haywan said.
"We'll get to the Air Force base faster."
"Not if we get eaten. Come on, let's take the next right and drive through the housing estates."
We turned up at a fork in the road and onto the much smaller track that weaved through the little squares and houses. I could still see the main road to our left whenever we went past a gap in the houses, and somehow it felt much safer to have the buildings on either side.
"Should we check any of the houses?"
Becca asked.
"Some of the doors are open, and I bet we could top up our supplies."
"Maybe in a bit," I said. "But I just got the feeling there was something lurking back there, and I want to make sure we're not being tracked."
"By people or dinos?"
Haywan asked.
"Both,"
I replied. And then I heard the same crunch that I heard before, but this time it was followed by another. It took me a moment to place the sound, and I realized it was the sound of long claws on tarmac. I took a quick look over my shoulder, but the street behind us was empty, and I couldn't see anything in the houses beside us.
"Something is here," I hissed at the girls. "It sounds like dino claws, but I can't tell where it is."
"Should we slow down to listen?"
Becca asked.
Or speed up to get away?"
"I vote to speed up," I said. "Let's get out into the city center and take as many quiet roads as possible so we don't..."
My sentence was cut short as the source of the noise revealed itself. A raptor the size of a large dog stepped out onto the road in front of us, and our motorbike screeched as we slammed on the brakes.
"Okay,"
I whispered as I pulled the pistol from my belt.
"Nice and easy. Nobody move."
The small dinosaur stared at me for a moment, and then its yellow eyes fixed on my weapon as I aimed at its head. The raptor suddenly broke into a run, and I pulled the trigger. The bullet hit the dino square in the skull, and the raptor sank to the ground.
Nice shot,
Heiwan said.
I guess after blowing up a T-Rex head, a raptor doesn't seem so scary.
I heard the scuttling noise again and spun around to see a whole pack of raptors pile out of the front door of a house.
Shit,
Pekka said as the dinosaurs looked at us curiously.
There's too many to shoot at once.
Yup, we need to go now.
Raptors are so fast,
Heiwan muttered.
Do you think we can outrun them?
I have no idea, I said, as the raptor at the front started to slowly approach the gate of the house. But we need to try. We started to drive, and the raptors started to chase us. I could hear the pack of creatures as their claws scratched the sidewalk and road behind us. Heiwan's motorbike was the fastest, and she led the way through the suburban maze toward the city center. As we weaved in and out between the main road and side streets, we seemed to lose a couple of the dinos. I glanced in my mirror and saw that a good 7 or so had still managed to keep up with our speed, and they were gaining on Becca at the back of the group. The blonde revved her engine, and I saw her legs swing out and kick a raptor in the face as it lunged at her.
How are we going to lose them?
Becca called as the raptors screamed.
They don't seem to be tiring out much.
If we can lose enough of them, we can kill the rest.
Does Heiwan know where she's going? Sort of,
the Korean replied.
I'm just following the signs to the town center.
I'm pretty sure we need to head north to get to Scampton. I need to double-check the map, but maybe we should skip the city center. I'm sure we can find our way without the signs.
If you're sure,
Heiwan shouted,
let's go deliver those dino samples.
The small dinos were still right behind us, and I tried to figure out the best way to lose them. There were still too many for us to stop and shoot, but we needed to check the GPS, which was impossible with bloodthirsty little raptors on our toes. We started to leave the suburbs, and the buildings around us turned from houses to department stores and little independent shops. Some of them had smashed windows, while others just looked like they had closed for the day and would be back to business as usual in the morning.
Guys!
Becca called.
I think they're speeding up, not slowing down.
I looked in my mirror, and sure enough, the small dinos had started to take it in turns to lunge at Becca. Their sharp claws were just out of reach of the back of the motorbike each time, but it was only a matter of time before they managed to snag the motorbike. I was debating what to do next when I spotted a sign for something called the Howell Creek Watershed Area. How do you girls feel about making a small jump on your motorbikes? I shouted.
What?
Becca screamed.
Are you crazy? Jason, what are you proposing here?
Becca's question was answered for her as we turned a corner to see the small river up ahead. The road ran alongside the waterway for a short distance and then turned toward the east. For most of the stretch I could see, the two banks were both level with each other, but then I saw a section on our side where the creek cut through a small hill, creating a small ramp of sorts on our side. I pulled off the road and pointed the motorbike toward the rise.
It's not that wide,
Heiwan shouted over the noise.
I think we can make it easily. Maybe you can,
Becca yelled.
You can't possibly expect me to just pull a jump off the first time I try it.
You need to keep going as fast as you can, I called.
I tried to remember what I had learned from all the BMX shows I had watched as a kid, and I hoped the same rules carried over to motorcycles.
Make sure you're lined up straight with the river,
Heiwan called back as she started to speed away from us.
Faster! Pull the front of the motorbike up the second you reach the edge of the river, then pull the rest. Make sure you're crouching rather than sitting, okay?
Becca nodded, but she looked uncertain. I could almost hear her reciting my instructions over the wind as we closed in on the river. And then suddenly, the small hill was right in front of us. I saw Heiwan's triumph sail into the air, and then it was my turn. I focused on the gap in front of me, took a deep breath, and pulled my handlebars upwards as the front wheel left the riverbank. I didn't have any logical thoughts as the motorbike flew into the air and over the water. I just focused on the dry land in front, crouched over, and aimed the front wheel down so it would land first. I hit the other side of the river before I even had time to process that I had left the ground. Heiwan was just in front of me with a huge grin on her face, and I turned to see Becca approach the river. I watched breathlessly as the blonde increased her speed and left the raptors behind. There was a moment when she seemed to hesitate, but one of the raptors made a last-ditch lunge toward her, so she crouched low over the bars and sent the motorbike through the air. She landed with a wobble, which nearly knocked her from the motorcycle, but then she regained her balance and skidded to a stop right next to us.
I can't believe that worked, I said with pride as I looked at the girls.
The raptors had stopped at the edge of the water, and screamed at us as one of them fell in and couldn't climb up the muddy bank. It looked like the river was deeper than it was wide, and I knew we shouldn't stick around to see what creatures laid within it.
Holy shit!
Becca gasped as she steadied herself back onto her motorbike. You are both amazing. What a skill to add to our dino hunting resume, expert motorcycle jumpers.
My heart is beating fast,
Heiwan said.
But quick thinking, Jason.
I ran a hand through my hair and laughed as I took one last look at the furious dinosaurs we had left behind. Their beady eyes stared at us, and their long claws sank into the mud as they tried to edge forward.
Should we shoot them?
Heiwan asked. Nah, we've lost them, and we shouldn't waste any ammo.
I don't want to hang around,
Becca said,
in case there's a baby scorpion in there, and it knows we killed its mum.
Let's get to Scampton. We're so close.
It's not far at all,
Heiwan said as she checked her GPS.
We'll be there in no time.
Then straight on to Ravenscar. Let's do this. We left behind the scream of the raptors, and I felt on cloud nine as my two girls drove on either side of me. It was hard to believe we were a few minutes away from the end of our top-secret government mission. I hoped that those dino samples would be the start of something, like a true understanding of how to defeat the creatures once and for all. Maybe they would be able to trace this all back to whoever started it or whatever it was that had created the portals in the first place. It was hard to imagine any kind of logic or motivation for wanting the planet overrun with bloodthirsty prehistoric beasts. But the military seemed to believe that was what had happened. We drove on, past the outer edges of Lincoln, and due north toward the base. There weren't any fields on this side of the city, just more terraced homes and business estates. We passed a long line of takeout places and a sign for some sort of theme park, and then I spotted the one I had been looking for.
We made it!
Becca exclaimed.
Look! There's a sign for the airbase!
We veered right and followed the signs to the RAF base. But a slight feeling of unease began to rise as we drew closer. I knew we had to be careful, because if the base was still up and active, there would be a lot of security. The Brigadier had promised to tell them we were coming, but what if the message never made it through? Keep your eyes open, I said, as the guarded gate loomed ahead. Let's make this transaction as smooth as possible. I'm hoping we get some supplies in return.
We do need more ammo,
Heiwan said.
And imagine the weapons they have in there.
They might not have much ammo left, I said, as we approached the base. But hopefully they can spare something for our troubles. As we approached the perimeter of the base, we could see that a wall had gone up around the place. It looked like something out of a movie, with dull gray metal panels that towered over the countryside. It wasn't completely seamless, and a few of the panels looked like they'd had some repair work done. But the walls would probably do a good job of keeping the smaller dinos out. The gate was made of the same metal slabs and sat on tracks in the road top. There was an intercom system on a nearby pole, and as we stopped, I took in the barbed wire along the top of the wall and the security cameras that were regularly spaced along the panels. The whole thing looked less like an RAF base and more like a Bond villain hideout. You got the briefcase, Becca? I asked, as two of the cameras swiveled in our direction.
Right here.
The blonde replied as she fumbled with the straps that she had used to secure the important cargo.
Here's that intro letter we were given.
I took the paper from Becca and glanced up at the CCTV camera. Here we go, I muttered. I pressed the buzzer of the intercom and counted to 10 as I waited for a response. We listened to the static on the other end until someone finally answered.
No civilians on the premises,
a sharp male voice said.
Please remove yourself and find shelter indoors. We cannot provide shelter for civilians.
We actually have something for you, I said. It's a briefcase from Brigadier Walston. It's top secret information or something. We have a letter to prove it. There was silence for a moment, and I glanced at the girls with a shrug.
Walston sent you?
The voice asked.
Why?
I honestly couldn't tell you, I said. Because we can handle ourselves and have motorbikes, I guess? After another really long count to 10, the gate swung open, and a well-built, middle-aged man in full RAF uniform stood in front of us with a rifle unlike any I'd seen before. It made ours look like water pistols, and I wondered if RAF Scampton had a weapons development lab.
Names!
The soldier barked. I'm Jason, I said. This is Heiwan, and that's Becca. Here's the letter. Can we come in? The soldier's eyes narrowed as he inspected our faces and motorbikes, and I saw him study the police markings with interest. He had an unusually gaunt face for such a muscular man, and a scar over his right cheek.
"Proceed," he said sharply. "I have informed the commander of your arrival."
We slowly pushed our motorcycles inside the base, and as soon as we passed the gates, they automatically slammed shut. The soldier stepped toward me, grabbed the letter from my hands, and tore it open. He scanned it quickly before he folded the paper and returned it to me.
"The new base commander will see you," the soldier said. "His station is on the other side of the base."
"New commander?" I asked. "What happened to the old one?"
"He was killed yesterday," the soldier said, and he looked slightly less stiff when he spoke. "He was one of those flying bastards that got him. He was a good man."
"I'm sorry to hear that," I said. "It's a different world now, but it doesn't get easier to hear about the losses."
"He was the toughest man I knew," the soldier said, as he glanced at the sky. "And that thing just cut him in half, in one fell swoop. Whatever it is you have for the commander, I hope it helps kill every last one of those reptilian bastards."
"We hope so, too,"
Becca said.
"How do we get to the commander?"
"The old place is a giant oval," the soldier said. "That hangar there is where most of the smaller planes are kept. The bigger ones are around the back of it. There's a few huts for living quarters, and a bunch of them have been turned into labs and offices for the people trying to work out this nightmare. The commander is right at the other end, but he's got maximum security, so you'll need to show that letter again before you get in, even though I radioed them."
I looked over at the sprawl of concrete in front of us. Soldiers walked between the rows of Quonset huts and the camo tents that had gone up more recently. The hangar was massive, but I noticed that all the doors were closed. I could see the wings through the windows, though, and the sound of distant radio static rang through the air. "Thank you," I said with a nod to the soldier. "We'll find our way." We started to drive slowly through the Air Force base, and as we did, we attracted the attention of the few soldiers we passed. They glanced at our motorbikes, and a few stares lingered on the girls. I couldn't blame them, since there probably wasn't much time for romance when you were a soldier during the apocalypse.
"Hey, Jason,"
Becca said.
"Do you think we could swipe you one of those uniforms for later?" "Oh, yeah,"
Haywan laughed.
"You would look so good, and you're already as brave as a soldier, so it would suit you well."
"Not sure how qualified I am to fly a plane," I grinned, "but I'll keep that in mind." We made our way past the hangar, and I could see four large planes parked close to each other just beyond it. One of them looked like it had taken a serious beating. The khaki paint was scratched up, and a crew of men stood around a bent wing. One of the younger men at the plane turned to watch us and gave the girls a goofy wave as we drove by. Haywan smiled, and Becca blew him a kiss, which probably made his entire week. As we approached the end of the large oval, I could see what the soldier had meant by the heightened security. There was a large black building that sat near the outer edge of the base, and there were at least five armored soldiers stationed around it. There was barbed wire over the roof and windows of the building, and more security cameras. "They're really trying to protect this one," I said. "I wonder how long it takes to run out of base commanders."
"Probably not long,"
Becca said.
"If their job is to be in the sky with those flying things."
We slowed down as we reached the guards, and the man who came to meet us looked even more grisly than the first soldier. He had a burn mark on his bald head, and his muscles looked like they had been carved out of stone. I guess they kept the toughest guys on guard duty, especially with base commanders being ripped in two.
"Papers,"
the soldier grunted, and I cautiously handed him the letter. The man's eyes slowly scanned the paper before he handed it back to me with another grunt.
"Off the motorbikes," the soldier said gruffly. "Take that armor stuff off, so we can search you."
"I mean, we do have weapons," I said. "But can you blame us?"
"We need to check for hidden explosives," the man barked.
I almost argued that we were in a rush, but I bit my tongue and nodded as I stepped off my motorcycle. I pulled my chest rig and armor off, and the girls did the same, until we stood in our jeans and shirts. Two more soldiers appeared, a middle-aged woman and a younger man. The female recruit approached the girls, and the man stepped toward me.
"Arms up,"
he said, and I held my hands high as he began his search. I had expected a quick pat-down like they do at the airport, but they were clearly taking no chances. The young man grabbed every inch of my arms and patted every inch of my chest, back, and legs. I could see why they had gotten a woman to search the girls as I watched the female soldier pat Becca's large chest. It was a very thorough search.
Clear,
the young man said, and the female soldier nodded in agreement. Okay, I said. Can we put our armor back on now? The large soldier nodded, and we went through the process of getting our protective gear back on.
Commander Bly will see you, the soldier said when we were done. Evans, lead them in.
The young man nodded and waited for us to follow.
Can we just leave our motorbikes here?
Haywan asked.
No one will take them? Yes,
the female soldier replied.
They're safe here while you go in.
Lead the way, then, I said, and I glanced over to make sure that Becca had the briefcase in hand.
Follow me,
Evans said, and he spun on his heels toward the black building. I started to follow him, but I froze when a familiar sound rang through the air, a crackling, ominous noise that we had grown far too accustomed to. A portal was opening.